From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM and welcome in 2013. Here we go, another year. And next hour, psychics and astrologers look at 2013. Here's what's happening. An agreement to stave off the harshest and most immediate consequences of that fiscal cliff. Just winning approval in the House late Tuesday, President Barack Obama said he would sign the law. The battle over which foreshadowed more fights with Congress over spending. But we've been saved somewhat from the fiscal cliff. The legislation takes steps towards resolving the combination of automatic tax hikes and spending cuts that took effect at midnight on January 1st. It preserves tax rates as they were at the end of 2012. Except for those individuals earning more than $400,000 and households earning over $450,000. But it also allows taxes on capital gains and dividends to go up as well. In a moment, Gerald Celente, our trends expert, will look at the fiscal cliff and also what's ahead in 2013. Motorists in the United States paid record high prices for gasoline in 2012. I don't have to tell you that, as severe weather and political tensions drove up the cost of fuel. The national average price of gasoline in 2012 was $3.60 a gallon, 9 cents more than the previous annual record that was set last year. Well, with reggae music pumping in the background and flashing disco-style lights, members of the Recreational Pot Club lit up in celebration of the new year and a new place to smoke legally among friends. It's called Club 64 in an industrial area just north of downtown Denver, operated at 4:20 p.m. Monday with some 200 people signed up. The opening came less than 24 hours after organizers announced they would charge almost $30 admission price for the Bring Your Own Pot Club. The private pot dens popped up less than a month after Colorado's governor signed into law a constitutional amendment allowing recreational pot use. Club 64 gets its name from the number of that amendment in that state. Chris Conrad, of course, is a court-qualified expert on cannabis, and he's with us here. You're going to see more and more of the states picking up on this, or just these few, Chris?
Well, I see this as being part of a big trend, especially since we now have Senator Leahy introducing, calling for, hearings on the policy and suggesting that we would legalize an ounce at the federal level for states that allow personal possession of an ounce. And if that were to happen, it would be really the best way to move forward. And in fact, what's interesting here, George, is there's a social pattern. Like the integration movement, really, it was the jazz clubs that brought blacks and whites together. The gay rights movement, you see, of course, there were the gay clubs where it was on, in fact, when police raided a gay club that caused the uprising in New York at Christopher Street and so forth. Medical marijuana, we had the medical marijuana clubs, or pot clubs, as they were called. And so, and now in Oakland, California, we have the Measure Z clubs because the city there voted to make even sales of marijuana, as long as it's in private, to members, being the lowest law enforcement priority. And so, overall, this is kind of a social trend that we've seen going on before. I'm extremely optimistic about the way this is shaping up.
And it doesn't look like, as we had talked about several months ago, Chris, that the federal government's going to do much about this.
Well, Obama was. The New York Times, talked to some people in the administration about some options, and it doesn't sound like they're going to be supportive. But I do think that, Obama must have, as he says, bigger fish to fry than go after these. And in the case of this, where people are not selling marijuana, they're just bringing it to share or to smoke by themselves, and they pay to be members of a private adult location in order to do that, it seems like something would be very hard for the federal government to really interject itself into on a serious level. The sad thing, though, is it has to be done on a clandestine level. Like, they didn't even announce where they were going to have this event on New Year's until something like a day or two before.
Right.
And so the problem is that if you try to have a steady location, that under the federal forfeiture laws, they could say this is a place where you're allowing marijuana to be used and go after property owners, which is what we've seen them do for the medical marijuana clubs. So the question is whether the Obama administration is going to let locations stay in a set place, establishment, or whether they're going to force them to be moving from place to place like Club 64 has had to do so far.
All right, we'll watch that. Chris, thanks so much. Have yourself a great rest of the new year, though it's clicking almost over here. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton was treated with blood thinners at a New York hospital. to help dissolve a blood clot in her head, and doctors were confident that she would make a full recovery. She was admitted to a hospital on Sunday due to the clot that was discovered during a follow-up exam related to a concussion that she suffered this month. Listen to this story. A young man from Tunisia. He is dead after winning a bet to eat 28 raw eggs. That's right. He's a 20-year-old. Swallowed the eggs after his friends challenged him to do this for a amount of money. So he did. The young man that experienced huge stomach pains, taken to the hospital, pronounced dead on arrival. Not very smart. The first meteor shower of 2013 will kick off the year's night sky events this week, giving stargazers a chance to ring in the new year with a celestial fireworks display. Who watches the skies? Dr. Sky. Stephen Cates with us. Stephen, what's the name of this meteor shower?
Well, George, it's known as the Quadrantids, kind of an interesting old constellation that's not in the sky anymore. But here's the skinny on the meteor shower. It's the first good one, as we welcome and say Happy New Year to the whole entire Coast family and yourself. But folks should start looking. This is the peak time. Look exactly on Wednesday evening midnight into the third. And the peak of this meteor shower, George, is favorable more to the western United States around 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Where do you look? High up in the northeastern part of the sky, and if it's clear, even though the moon will still be bright, just below the tail of the Big Dipper, the Ursa Major or Big Dipper group that we call the constellation itself, you should maybe get to see at this point in time upwards of about 50 meteors per hour, more when, of course, it's darker. But what's interesting, George, in our closing moment here about this is that this particular meteor shower, just like last month's Geminids, are probably not from a comet, but from a rocky body, an extinct asteroid we call 2003 EH1. So this should be a heck of a good shower, but unfortunately the moon, still waning gibbous, but don't give up, folks. And the reason most people, George, don't get to see this one is because it lasts for a short time, and it's usually very cold in the northern hemisphere. But don't forget, in closing, two great comets, George, as we welcome in the new year and hope to talk about those as 2013's probable best astronomy events.
I love it, Stephen. Thank you. You keep watching those skies for us. Up next, Gerald Celente joins us. We'll look at his year in review, top trends for 2013, get his reaction to the fiscal cliff, and take your phone calls. All of that this hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome to our New Year's Night program. I'm George Norrie. This, of course, is Coast to Coast AM, and Gerald Celente is the founder and director of the Trends Research Institute and today's number one trend analyst. He regularly provides business and industry with presentations and commissioned research studies in more than 300 trend categories. And here's Joe. Gerald, Happy New Year to you, my friend.
Hey, Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on, George.
Me too. So it looks like we've avoided the fiscal cliff, but what does it all mean to most of us, Gerald?
Well, you know, first of all, what they've done, this is the first election, presidential election, that following it, there was no post-election euphoria. And the bud fell off the rose right away. And they went right into this fiscal cliff drama. And that's what it is. I mean, this is the D.C. drama queens and the Beltway Circle bunch of jerks that they could push this in front of the public day after day after day. And it's another of their fear and hysteria tactic. If it's not terror or something else, they're terrorizing us with the myth that we're going to fall off a fiscal cliff and that they have this kind of control over the population that continues this drumbeat into our head that we are subjects of these clowns is a disgusting testament to this country. Having said that, they've done nothing. They've only postponed it. Come mid-February, they're going to, whether or not, to raise the nation's $16.4 trillion debt ceiling. So, you know, this is just more of the same and not much.
Gerald, what would have been wrong had they just merely extended the Bush tax cuts and then said, we're also going to cut spending, we're going to cut budgets in different areas? Wouldn't that have worked?
That's exactly it. But they're not going to cut anything. And what they're going to do, and when you really look at this, again, we're talking about a $16.4 trillion debt ceiling.
And how much more debt could we pile on? And they're not cutting big things. You know, they're not cutting defense. They're not ending these wars. You know, they're not people like Google and Starbucks and all of Walmart's and all of these countries and companies with their offshore Cayman Islands, Bermuda, and other tax dodges. You know, they're still getting away with this stuff. So, you know, what they're really looking at is very small compared to what they have to do.
Gerald, when you look at trends, you know, you head up the trendsresearch.com, and you do a great job doing that. What do you look like before you make your predictions?
Well, you know, what we do, you know, as you know, I'm a political atheist. So I just look at things for what they are, not the way I want them to be. And too many people are locked into a belief system. So what we try to do is we look at what's going on around the world and then assess how those implications are going to play out. But people, again, you know, just by watching this whole drama unfold, the Republicans and the Democrats, they tend to get caught up with the whole system rather than who these people are, what they're doing, what their level of competence or incompetence is, and what their track record is, and looking at that, then deciding where we think they're going to lead us. So we try to do it as objectively as possible. Again, I don't believe in political religions, and I certainly don't bow to political gods.
No, not at all. So let's take a look at 2013, and let's kick aside, of course, the legislation they've just knocked out tonight. What do we look like this year ahead?
More of the same, but worse. And again, I'm not being a pessimist or an optimist. I'm looking at the facts. George, the only reason why the economy is moving along as it is now, not only in the United States, but in Europe and Japan and China, around the world, is that they're dumping cheap money into the system.
Yes.
They have names for it. They call it quantitative easing. Over in Europe this time last year was long-term refinancing operations, ongoing monetary transactions. You just got a new prime minister of Japan, Abe, and he's forcing the Bank of Japan to lower interest rates. So by lowering interest rates and bringing them down to historic lows, they're making money available for the banks to keep it going and the people to stay afloat. Look, I just took out I just bought a historic building up here in Colonial Kingston, New York, on the most historic corner in the United States, the Franz Rogen House. Anybody could look it up, R-O-G-G-E-N. It's a 1750s house. I got a commercial loan for 3.25%. Locked in for it's 20-year loan, locked in for 10 years, and they covered closing costs.
Amazing.
I know, and this is what's keeping it alive. So the fundamentals of the economy are not picking up. We are not creating jobs that pay real wages. You look again, you look at the data. You look at this whole millennial generation born between roughly 1980 and 2000. They go to college, and what do they get? They leave with about $30,000 worth of debt. When you look at the data, again, only the data, you have 50% of them that do get jobs, have jobs that require a high school education. In other words, they're not making any money. So when you look, George, at the jobs that are being created, where the country is going, it's China, it's Japan, it's Europe. They're all dumping money into the system to keep it going. So we're saying, more of the same, but worse. It's not going to get better.
I needed a part for a St. Louis studio computer that I've got, Gerald. So I went out to one of the office supply stores a couple days ago, picked it up, and, of course, I brought it home, installed it. It works, okay? But it says on the back, made in China. I mean, everything is made in China.
And they sold us out. And they can the same jerks that put on this drama, the Republicans and the Democrats. You remember the debate between Ross Perot and Al Gore back in '94. People forget that both the Reagan administration and George Bush Sr., they couldn't push through NAFTA. They had to get a Democratic phony over there to front it for them by the name of Bill Clinton. And they said, and you go back and play over the videotape, as they used to say, and they promised us that they were going to create a much better job environment for all of us. We would get rid of those dirty, filthy manufacturing jobs. We'd have these wonderful, wonderful, high-paying service sector jobs, and our standard of living would increase. They've sold us out at every level with NAFTA, with the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act. And you mentioned, for example, you just went out and bought a part made in China at one of these Staples, or I assume mm-hmm. one of these big stores.
This was Office Depot.
Yeah, Office Depot. Well, you and I are old enough to remember when there used to be local stationery stores.
That's right. And little
right.
ones.
Remember that quaint little thing called hardware stores? Oh, we remember when we used to have a pharmacy that was owned by a local person and not by CVS or Rite Aid or Walgreens. So when you're talking about made in China, the whole system has been taken away from the people and put in the hands of the bigs. The four words that have killed American capitalism are too big to fail. That's not capitalism. That's fascism. And fascism is the merger of state and corporate powers. They've repealed all the laws that were put in place, the Robertson-Patman Act, the Clayton Antitrust Act, the Sherman Antitrust Act, that allowed the American people to compete and to build an entrepreneurial society. So now you go to pick up that computer part at a place like Home Depot or Office Max, and what is the guy making or woman making? And look at the lousy job that they have.
Now, let's look at this for 1 second, too, Gerald. What do you recommend as we roll into 2013 now that Americans do? Those who are working preserve their job, obviously. But what about people who are still looking for work? What do they do? What's on the horizon for them?
We have to start it over again, and it's very difficult. I will only say this, this young millennial generation, I call them Generation F'd, and what they're doing now, and you're starting to see it, they're going into areas that are run down and inner cities that you know people don't want to live in anymore. It's a new homesteading, and they're trying to do it all locally. They're trying to buy local, make it local, not made in China. That should be the logo on everything. Not made in China. Made in Portland. You know, made in St. Louis. Made in Ohio. This is a lot of baloney that we have to keep sending our jobs overseas so that the big companies, the multinationals, could ship the stuff back here and sell it back to us. So I believe that the future is in the hands of these 77 million strong. It's a wave as big as the baby boom. They're highly educated, and they know that they have to create their own future. It's the buy local, make local. Mm-hmm. We have areas up here in upstate New York. They used to call it the Borscht Belt. It was where all the entertainers used to go in the Catskills. Now all of these rundown areas, they're starting to get life again in them by young people homesteading them. So that's what I would suggest. Oh, and by the way, right up here in Uptown Kingston, New York, in Colonial Kingston, last night, the guys around, all the people around here said, let's do our own ball drop. They closed off the street. Thousands of people showed up. All the restaurants flourished, and the restaurants weren't Applebee's or Olive Gardens. You know, they were the, you know, Elephants and Duos and all the local places.
Yeah.
Bring it back home.
You have to do that. You have to. Gerald, stay with us. We're going to come back. Final half hour with you. We're going to take phone calls with the trends expert, Gerald Celente. Let's get your views, your thoughts as well. Gerald's website, trendsresearch.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, follow us on Facebook and Twitter. It's happening. It's the new social networking. And we've got it for you at coasttocoastam.com. Simply go to our website. It's all up there in the far right-hand corner. Well, next hour, we'll continue with our thoughts and predictions of 2013. Psychic Joseph Jacobs joins us next hour. A number of other psychics and astrologers will join us throughout the night. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Gerald Celente with us this hour. Of course, he's got his finger on the pulse of what's happening out there. Gerald, when you got into all of this, the trends, forecasting, what got you into it?
You know, well, I began my career. I used to run political campaigns in Westchester County in New York, and then they sent me up to Albany, and I was the assistant to the Secretary of the New York State Senate. And by the way, that was the worst job I ever had. I'm a guy who was born in the Bronx, you know, grew up in Yonkers, watching grown men grovel all day long to suck their way up to the top. You know, it was just disgusting. Yeah. But anyway, from there, I taught American politics and campaign technology at St. John's University. And then for several years, I was a government affairs specialist in D.C. for the chemical industry. So I got to see a lot of different sides. And when I became a political atheist, it was, I'll never forget the day, Jimmy Carter had come back from Iran, and he announced that the Shah was the island of stability in the Middle East. And I've been following this for years, and I knew, you know, the brutal dictatorship and how they overthrew the democratically elected government of Mossadegh in 1953. And when I saw millions of people taking to the streets, I knew this revolution was real. And so at that moment, I said, I've been around this stuff long enough. This is just a lot of BS. And then the whole nation was, you know, buying into this, I said to myself, what will be the implications? And you remember back then it was, you know, day 7 of the day 200, yeah. Day 300 of the hostage crisis. I said, gold and oil prices are going to go up because of this. And I started speculating in gold and oil. And this is like in the late 1970s. And I had no idea what I was doing. You know, I was a young guy. And I made enough money to quit my job, which I was beginning to hate because I didn't want to do that anymore. You know, putting together lobbyists and scientists to kill environmental legislation. I said, I can't keep doing this. And then I realized that current events form future trends. And there's a cause and effect.
That's right.
And that was the beginning of it.
Well, and you do a great job doing it. And a lot of people look towards you, Gerald, to forecast for them. I'm amazed that government doesn't say, Gerald Celente, meet with us on a regular basis. Tell us what you think we should be doing. It seems so simple.
Well, why don't they have a cabinet position of a secretary of trends and consequences?
Great idea. Great idea. They should do that.
Yeah, but they won't. It's because who they are. And the who they are, this is what I'm saying. You know, I spent time up in Albany. The who they are the same people that we couldn't stand in high school and college that wanted to be class president and head of the student council.
Yeah, and they made it.
People.
Let's go to Robin in Poto, Oklahoma, east of the Rockies. Robin, get us started here with Gerald Celente. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good, Robin.
Well, this season, I remade ornaments, Christmas ornaments, and made stuff out of stuff, and I sold them out on the street. So that was my business venture. What I wanted to know was, if I did container planning, if I can make enough. We have like a restaurant, grocery store. Is it feasible that I can make enough in container planters to sell the vegetables to the store? I can't bend over anyway because of the arthritis. I'm going to have to go to container planters. George, send out somebody, the psychic coast-to-coast people, to send me some kind of old bathtubs or something, okay? And I'll get off there. Thank you.
All right. Well, Gerald, when you talk about a small business, whether it's making containers or what, I mean, should you do it as a part-time thing? What do you do?
Well, you know, everybody has this great gift. We all have a secret weapon. You know, we're all individuals. And bringing that great gift to its highest level, to me, is the meaning of life. And when enough people do that, and they find the greatness within themselves and live fulfilling lives, then the whole society changes because you don't accept mediocrity. I think it's great with what Robin is doing and to get, making Christmas ornaments, making things locally. Oh, by the way, food, it's going to be one of the huge trends, safe food, clean food. It's going to be there's no end in sight. The more the garbage food that comes out, the more the demand for the other. So anything that you can do to be creative, and the people are in the country are looking for it. Not everybody is looking for quality, but that's where the market is if you're going to make money. And as negative as things are economically, and yeah, you might have, you know, 50 million people on food stamps. Remember, we're a country of 315 million people. So there are a lot of people with money, and that's the market that you have to go to as well. I'm not talking about the rich. I'm talking about the people that want quality in their lives. And I believe that this is a great opportunity because people are looking for something true and real. And the Christmas ornament story is part of a growing trend. Oh, there's a shop right over here down the street from us on John Street here in Kingston. They have, and they're doing phenomenal. It's a craft shop.
Yeah.
It's all local artists. All the toys, everything in there are from people from Ulster County.
Well, you know what? People tend to support that, don't they?
They want it. They don't want made in China. They want American. They want this community where I'm in is doing well because everybody here understands when everyone does well, everyone does well. There's no jealousy. Everyone wants to see everybody doing better so that the community could grow. And that's what it's about. It's about the community. First, it starts with the person, and then it keeps spreading. And I have to tell you, what we're looking at with this fiscal cliff and everybody seeing how disgusting all of this is, the vacuum has never been bigger. It could be filled with anything. And I contend that it can be filled with greatness and we could have a renaissance in this country.
Driving now somewhere, here's Gary. Probably where? Los Angeles? Where are you, Gary?
Well, actually just driving down through Portland down to Eugene, Oregon for a sales meeting tomorrow.
All right, great. Good to have you with us. Go ahead.
You guys touched on a subject or he had spoken about something as far as made in China. I work for a major manufacturer here in North America. We've got 5 manufacturing facilities in the U.S. And we compete against people that historically, without naming names, that people would recognize and believe are American manufacturers. And one of the products we make, we are the last people in North America that still make it here in the U.S. And we eventually had to go offshore to have a complementary line.
Okay.
So that we can compete against the imports. And on our trip to China, Americans, they associate low labor costs or, things that they believe bring the price of a product down. But when you go see them build a plant to where they'll build a 2,000-unit apartment building, which houses the contractors who build the plant, and then once the plan is done, they just ship in. The one I went to was a town of 50,000 people, and they shipped in 2,000 people to run this plant. And every year around Chinese New Year, that's when everybody gets to go and they retool the plant. And 600 or so people don't come back because they're not there with their families. They're not there with their children and their wives. And they get homesick and can't come back. That's what we're competing against.
And it's difficult to break, Gerald. And I don't know, Gerald, when you look at trends, I don't know if the manufacturing sector is ever coming back in this country, is it?
Well, one of the things that's not mentioned, they used to have a thing called trade barriers. And again, I'm not talking about putting up trade barriers in terms of making it, ridiculous. I'm talking about putting in place what used to be. And that's when people say to me, what are the solutions? I say, when was it working better? It was working pre-NAFTA. It was working better pre-World Trade Organization. It was working better when we had those laws in place like Clayton and Sherman antitrust and Robinson Patman. So things have to go back into place. It's not a level playing field, as the caller just said. You know, what do they have? 1.2 billion people. And you know, they may say, yeah, the Chinese economy is growing. They have 400 million people in the middle class. But when you look at that per capita income, you know, it's down near a rocks when you take the whole country into consideration.
How many manufacturing plants are empty, idle, old facilities in most of our major cities now across the country?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, look at Detroit. There's a website, Decaying Detroit.
Oh, my old hometown.
And you look at, you've seen it? And you, these beautiful buildings that used to exist, high craftsmanship, you know, real European quality craftsmanship at one time, and now they're all going into dust. Look what they've done to this country at every level. They've sold us out. That's why these barriers were put into place. And by the way, I'll tell you the most disturbing trend I see. We're seeing a parallel, George. The crash of 1929, the Great Depression, currency wars. Mm-hmm. I mentioned about the new prime minister of Japan, Abe. He says currency wars have begun. That's why the Bank of Japan is now pumping money into the system so that they can lower the value of the yen so they can export more product because Japan's in a recession. The same thing in Europe. They're lowering interest rates. They're dumping money in a currency war. The outgoing governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, was just in New York saying, quote, there's a currency war going on. You have Guido Mantega, the finance minister of Brazil. There's a currency war going on. Again, the crash of 29, the Great Depression, currency wars, trade wars. The trade wars are heating up. World War follows. You're seeing the same thing. The panic of 08, the Great Depression. Much of this world is in depression. Make no mistake about it. How they could call it what's going on in Spain, what's going on in Greece, what's going on in Portugal, what's going on in Ireland, recessions, when 25% of the people are out of work officially, 50% among the youth. And then throughout a lot of the Middle East, the same problems. We're in a depression. We're in currency wars. We're in trade wars. And my greatest fear is that they're going to take us to world war.
And you know what? That's very possible. Very possible indeed. Probably within the next 3 years. What do you think?
It could be sooner. Because, again, you're seeing these same madmen that are saying they're going to take us over a fiscal cliff. How about this? Let's start a war in Iraq. Forget the reasons. We'll make them up. And we'll lose it. We'll spend $1 trillion, kill 1 million people, lose thousands of our soldiers, limbless, mindless, and they're coming back destroyed. What is it, 26,000 troops from Afghan and Iraq now in the United States are homeless? Let's start a war in Afghanistan. It'll be the longest war in American history. We'll lose it, dump money into it. George, you have stupid people making stupid decisions. How about that wonderful humanitarian mission in Libya? Wasn't that a beauty by our Nobel Peace Prize winning president? And now they're talking about Syria. Every 6 days they're talking about Syria has chemical weapons. Can they fall into the hands of the terrorists? Again, all that they keep doing is spreading fear and hysteria. And then you look, George, at what's happened on these holidays when nobody's watching. Last New Year's Eve, Obama signed the National Defense Authorization Act.
That's right.
And all your listeners know what that is.
Yep.
And then just 2 days ago when nobody was watching again, they just signed in more of that warrantless wiretapping and they could watch us do everything that they want. So I believe they're putting all of these martial law laws into effect because they know that there's going to be blowback. And you cannot keep doing this in foreign countries saying that you're going to bring down this person and that person before it comes home to roost. And I believe they know it's going to happen. And I believe that that's why these laws are being put into place.
You might be right. They're getting ready. Let's go to Tom, Racine, Wisconsin. Go ahead, Tom. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Sure thing.
How are you doing? It's a great show. I just got a quick couple of comments and then, you know, my question.
Okay.
You know, didn't Nixon kind of start this, you know, I mean, and then also with, you know, the shipping, we gave up all of our ships to foreign countries to do our shipping for us. I don't understand that, but hey, I mean, my question is, what do you see for, you know, for people on disabilities or on retirement, you know, with all these things happening? It's getting kind of scary.
The fixed income person, what do they do?
Well, it is scary because I mentioned low interest rates. They had a quaint thing that they used to do in this country that they used to teach us about, saving. Remember that one? Wasn't that a quaint idea? You put money in the bank and you get interest on it, savings. Now you put money in the bank, you get nothing back. It's a losing deal. You know, you're putting, and with the time inflation goes and devaluation of the currency, and the currency has been devalued, you go back to, let's go back a decade ago. And what was gold? What, $250 an ounce? As we speak, it's around $1,700 an ounce. That's a devaluation. So they are, the rest of us are getting creamed because they want to keep the system going by dumping this money into it. I want to throw a positive trend out here, George, and okay. I want people to really start thinking about this because there is opportunity out there. And we're the only ones really speaking about this now. And, of course, there's going to be all the top trends are coming out in the Trends Journal within about a week or so. But one of them is New Millennium Education. Think about it. You have these little kids. They're wired totally different. They got these handhelds. They're doing – matter of fact, toys – took a hit this year because of tablets, because of electronic and handheld devices.
That's right. That's what kids want. They all wanted those things.
They all want them. Not only are they doing things different, they're wired differently. Their minds think differently. The education system that we have today was built around an industrial age model. Reading, writing, doing some math, and following orders. It was put in place for the industrial age. Everybody knows we're in the digital age, but the education system hasn't – no, they're not near this. It's a whole new learning process, good and bad, the best and the worst of it, because a lot of it's not great. I mean, you go out now, you see you sit at a table of six people, and four of them are on handheld devices. They're not communicating anymore.
That's right. They're just sending their text messages away. That's true.
So now the people that find out how to teach these new generations, we are going to see a dynamic and fundamental change in education that's really going to be life-changing.
That's
going
to happen.
And the people that understand this and get on the leading edge of it are going to have great opportunities.
Gerald Celente, thank you so much. Gerald's website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Joseph Jacobs, psychic extraordinaire, joins us on Coast to Coast AM.